Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Criminal Defendants and Deficient Legal Advice Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 21, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decisions in Lassler v. Cooper and Missouri v. Cry. The questions in both cases revolved around what happens when a criminal defendant receives deficient legal advice. In Lassler v. Cooper, the court considered whether a criminal defendant who rejects a favorable plea offer based on his lawyer's advice and later is convicted and receives a harsher sentence can seek to overturn that sentence on the grounds that his attorney was unconstitutionally deficient. Missouri v. Fry considered whether a criminal defendant whose lawyer failed to communicate a plea offer from the prosecution can successfully claim ineffectiveness of counsel if he is later convicted and sentenced more harshly under a less favorable plea agreement. In Lassler v. Cooper, the court vacated and remanded the judgment of the lower court, holding by a vote of 5-4 that a criminal defendant who A, rejects a plea offer based on legal advice so deficient that it violates the Sixth Amendment, and B, later is convicted at trial and receives a harsher sentence, can C, seek reconsideration of his sentence if he shows a reasonable probability that, but for the ineffectiveness of counsel, first, the plea agreement would have been presented to and accepted by the court, and two, the subsequent conviction and sentence or both under that plea agreement would have been less severe than the judgment and the sentence that were actually imposed. Justice Kennedy delivered the opinion of the court, which is joined by Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Scalia filed a dissenting opinion that was joined by Justice Thomas and Full and by the Chief Justice as to all except Part 4, and Justice Alito filed a separate dissenting opinion. The court, likewise, vacated and remanded the judgment of the lower court by a vote of 5-4 in Missouri v. Fry, holding that the Sixth Amendment right to effectiveness of counsel in criminal cases includes the right to notice from one's attorney of the terms of a plea offer from the prosecution. Failure to convey such terms to the defendant violates that right. To obtain relief, however, the defendant must still establish a reasonable probability that, had he received the effective assistance of counsel, A, the defendant would have accepted the plea offer, B, the resulting plea would have been entered by the court, and C, that agreement would have resulted in a plea to a lesser charge or lighter sentence than was actually imposed. Justice Kennedy delivered the opinion of the court, which is joined by Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Scalia, joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Thomas and Alito, filed a dissenting opinion. To discuss the cases, we have Kent Scheidegger, who is the legal director of the Criminal Justice Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Scheidegger.
On March 2nd, the United States Supreme Court decided the cases of Missouri v. Fry and Lassler v. Cooper. In these cases, the court allowed convicted criminal defendants to challenge their convictions and sentences, despite an admittedly fair trial or an admittedly knowing and voluntary guilty plea, based on a claim that their lawyers had been ineffective with regard to an earlier plea offer no longer in effect. This is a stunning decision, aptly characterized by Justice Scalia in dissent as embracing a sporting chance theory of criminal law. In any other kind of litigation, an error by an attorney for one side cannot overturn a judgment for the other side. The recourse of a party injured by attorney incompetence is a malpractice action against the attorney. In criminal law, though, damages cannot make the injured party whole, and there is a constitutional right to counsel. The Supreme Court has therefore recognized a limited right to attack the criminal judgment on this ground, placing the prosecution in the awkward and sometimes impossible position of trying to defend its former adversary. In the landmark case of Strickland v. Washington, the Supreme Court established two requirements for overturning a judgment for ineffective assistance. The first requirement is deficient performance of the attorney, which is not disputed in these cases. The second requirement is commonly referred to as the prejudice prong. Strickland gave us two definitions for prejudice. One is that an attorney's errors, quote, deprive the defendant of a fair trial, a trial whose result is reliable, end quote. Later in the opinion, Strickland says the test is, quote, a reasonable probability that, but for counsel's unprofessional errors, the result of the proceeding would have been different, unquote. In the typical ineffective assistance case, the reasonable probability test is the measure by which we decide if the reliability is so impaired as to warrant overturning the judgment. There are exceptions, however. When a conflict of interest adversely affects counsel's representation, no further showing of prejudice is required. Conversely, when an argument of law that might have been accepted at the time is now known to be meritless, there is no prejudice, even if the result probably would have been different. Also, the fact that a different result might have been obtained by making an appeal for jury nullification, or allowing witness to commit perjury does not amount to prejudice under Strickland. The difference between probability of a different result and reliability of the result actually obtained lies at the heart of these cases. In the first case, Galen Fry was caught driving after his license was revoked for the fourth time, which is a felony. The prosecutor offered a plea deal for a misdemeanor charge, but defense counsel never told Fry about it. 2 days after the offer expired, Fry was arrested again for his fifth offense. Fry later pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 3 years in prison. There is no argument at this point that this guilty plea was not otherwise informed and voluntary. In the second case, Anthony Cooper shot Callie Mundy as she was running away from him, causing life-threatening injuries. He was offered a plea bargain with a maximum sentence of 7 years, but turned it down on his lawyer's advice. He claimed that the lawyer told him he could not be convicted of intent to murder because the victim had been shot below the waist. It is unclear whether the lawyer really did give such bizarre and patently wrong advice, but the state did not contest that the lawyer was ineffective. Cooper was convicted at trial of assault with intent to commit murder and sentenced to 15 to 30 years. There is no claim at this point of any error in the trial. By a bare majority of 5-4, the Supreme Court decided that these ineffective assistance claims could be used to collaterally attack the judgments in these cases. The court applied the portion of Strickland that refers to a reasonable probability of a different result and gave a narrow reading to the cases that declined to imply that test when the result is reliable, even though it might have been different. Disappointingly, the Cooper opinion does not mention the critical passage of Strickland, holding that reliability of the result is the basic principle, even though that point was thoroughly briefed and was stressed in the dissent. At oral argument in Cooper, Justice Kennedy asked defense counsel incredulously, quote, "You are saying it was unfair to have a fair trial?" End quote. Yet, he wrote the opinion saying pretty much that. Quote, "Far from curing the error, the trial caused the injury from the error," unquote. The so-called injury was a fair trial, a correct verdict, and a just sentence for the crime. The question of prejudice is not as simple as asking whether the defendant would have accepted the offer if properly advised, even under the court's test, though. There must also be a reasonable probability, the court said, that the offer would not have been revoked by the prosecution where it is allowed to revoke, and that it would have been accepted by the trial judge. In the Fry case, that seems unlikely in light of Fry's subsequent offense, and the state appellate court erred in not considering these factors. The Supreme Court vacated the decision and remanded. That leaves the question of remedy in the Cooper case. For ineffective assistance at trial, the remedy is a new trial. For ineffective assistance when the defendant accepts a plea bargain, the remedy is to vacate the plea and let the parties make a new agreement or go to trial. The remedy in a case such as this is not clear. The federal district court in this case had ordered specific performance of the original plea offer, even though there is no way the prosecution could receive its part of the bargain, which was avoiding trial, a trial that has already happened. The Sixth Circuit, nonetheless, had affirmed that remedy. The Supreme Court vacated and remanded on this point, and it surprisingly punted the difficult question of remedy to the trial judge. The court said that under the circumstances of this case, the prosecution must reoffer the original bargain, but then the trial judge has discretion what to do with it. Quote, "The state trial court can then exercise its discretion in determining whether to vacate the convictions and resentence respondent to the plea pursuant to the plea agreement, to vacate only some of the convictions and resentence respondent accordingly, or to leave the convictions and sentence from trial undisturbed." After all this, then, it is quite possible that the remedy will be no remedy at all, and Cooper and others in similar situations will end up with their sentences unchanged. Undoubtedly, there will then be further litigation on the question of whether the trial judge abused the discretion the Supreme Court gave him. The critical practice question for prosecutors is how to protect their judgments from this additional round of litigation layered on top of an already burdened system. For the Fry scenario of an offer that defense counsel did not communicate to the defendant, the court offers some possibilities on page 10 of the slip opinion. The most important of these is to get on the record at the next court appearance with the defendant present that the offer was made and confirm that the defendant is aware of it. The Cooper situation, where defense counsel erroneously advises on the law, is more difficult, as the advice will generally be made in private and privileged. A defendant's false claim of bad advice may or may not be contradicted by the defense lawyer. Procedural reforms in collateral review can require these claims to be made soon after trial, while the defense lawyer is still around, still remembers, and still needs to protect his reputation. It may be necessary to start imposing civil liability for ineffective assistance so that trial counsel will have a direct monetary incentive to not only provide effective assistance, but to document that they have done so and to defend the quality of their representation when challenged. The Supreme Court in these cases dismissed the argument that allowing claims such as these will open the floodgates. It may be a leak rather than a flood, but leaks cause damage too. It may be a long time before we know how much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.